Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have been serving this valley for decades. Why? Because the customer comes first. I don't care whether you want auto, home, life, business insurance. They've got it all. They've got experts in each area that will help you and direct you to the right insurance at the best price. And if there's a claim, they will jump right in as your partner. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in beautiful downtown Hummel's Wharf. All right, now we're on, you know, the eclipse. Yeah, we had the full effect of it about a half hour ago. Got to about 77%. Now the sun is starting to reappear. We've been fortunate. We've been able to have it on a day where it's been mostly sunny here. Most of the country that's on the direct 100% line, all the way down to South Carolina, and South Carolina will finally finish up there in about an hour. They'll actually hit there in about an hour. But the most of the line has been pretty clear, but there have been some parts of the country where, you know, hey, we're going to get this. It's going to be great. And they had a cloudy day and a rainy day. We didn't have that. And we ended up with 77% coverage about a half hour ago. So it's been interesting. It's been fun. There have been parties surrounding it. People along the line, as a matter of fact, the 100% line, there are a lot of small towns that have been able to reap the economic benefit of having tourism come into their towns. It's been great. Dennis Dodd coming up in a few moments from CBS Sports. Jim Delaney next half hour. And then one of our more popular podcasts, might be the most popular podcast we've had in the last couple of months, is Spider Caldwell. So we're going to revisit with him for those of you who missed it in the final hour of the show today. So that's what we have coming up. And as the eclipse rolls on, we're now getting a little more sunshine with each passing minute here. And for the next hour, about an hour from now, we'll be back to full sunshine as the moon exits and gets out of here. The suit, unfortunately, overreacted to the eclipse. He was completely convinced that the eclipse was going to mean the end of the world, and thus he sold all his holdings. Not good. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dennis Dodd next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf as the eclipse continues here across the area. And don't forget, a week from today, Front Street Station, that's where we'll be. Looking forward to seeing everybody as we get to our Penn State and high school previews coming up. In fact, the opening game of high school football season coming up on Friday night. That is incredible. Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, joins us. Dennis, welcome back. The SEC, they get their media day rolling first. They did that a few weeks ago. I mean, is there any conference that does a better job of being a marketing machine than the SEC?
They have been great. The media days themselves have become so big and so compartmentalized that some of that access, except for the network, is not as open as it used to be. But I don't think that's the way it is in any sport, baseball, football, anything. But it cracks the seal on the season, the unofficial beginning of college football.
Yeah, no question. I want to get to a couple of issues. Let's start with, obviously, the transfer rule. The Sutton kid from Kansas State, Bill Snyder putting out 35 schools, including some in Division II that, quote, you can't transfer to. How do you view all of this, and what changes need to be made?
Well, it's being addressed. There's a transfer working group, if you will, made up of NCAA administrators. Now, I know no one wants to hear about another committee at the NCAA, but they are working diligently on this issue. The first fix is going to be pretty easy. If it makes it to the convention in 18 in January, that Bill Snyder thing can't happen. In other words, a coach won't be able to block a kid from transferring by not releasing a scholarship. That's, you know, ridiculous on its face, because of a lot of reasons. So I think that will get fixed. The hard part is the grad transfer thing. So there's a lot of people that want that time spent in grad school to be a legitimate progress towards a degree,
right?
A master's degree. I'm not sure if I agree with that. And the year in residence. That's going to be a very thorny issue. As where it stands right now, we all know that if you're an existing athlete and you want to transfer, unless you get a waiver, you have to sit out that year in residence.
Right, exactly. Also, Oklahoma made the big move. Bob Stoops leaves. Lincoln Riley comes in. They went through a spring practice under this current system. Was the timing right to do what they did at Oklahoma, in your opinion, for success?
The more I think about it, the more I say yes. I mean, Look, no one planned this. It was a complete shock to everybody. So this wasn't, I don't think there was anything they sat down, around a table in January and talked about this. He just felt like it was time. And if you think about it, we're talking about early June. I think it was June 7th that he stepped down, Bob Stoops. What else is going on? The hay's in the barn. You're doing off-season conditioning. The season is 3 months away. And, you know, everybody's just kind of chillaxing. So you get the new coach in there. Get him ready to put his staff together and his seal on things, and you're good to go. Now, obviously, the other part of that is you're elevating the youngest coach in FBS. And that has been, you know, they say never be the guy to follow the guy. You know, it wasn't a good idea for Ron Zook. But Lincoln Riley is seen as that guy, that next generation. And Oklahoma does have a track record in these sorts of things. Bud Wilkinson was 31 when he took over in 1949. And Barry Switzer was 34 when he took over. Lincoln Riley's 33.
Right. You put out your annual rankings of FBS coaches, including the hot seat rankings. Who makes the hot seat for you?
Well, at the very top are Brian Kelly and Kevin Sumlin, who basically have to win this year or they're gone, at least in my opinion. We know it's a statement of fact at Texas A&M because Kevin Sumlin's AD came out at the SEC spring meetings and told that on national television.
Right.
He told Paul Feinbaum that Kevin Sumlin has to win or else. And after three consecutive 8-5s there in Aggieland, they're kind of sick of that whole start fast, finish slow thing. And so he's on warning. Brian Kelly, 4-8. You know, it's the second worst record, at least tied for it in Notre Dame history. Charlie Weiss went 3-9. 2008 or 9, I can't remember. But he has to win. I don't know if 6-6 in a bowl game even gets him there.
Right, that's interesting. Who else ought to be in that? I think you've got four coaches. Start improving now. Who needs to get it going and start hitting the gas?
Yeah, I think Cliff Kingsbury, a guy who as a supermodel is great, but as a head coach.
That's why I like
that. We're not sure of yet. He's 24-26. Last year, he literally had the nation's best offense, yards per game, and literally the nation's worst defense, right, yards per game. So I don't know where you come out on that. It's not really a recipe for success in my book. He has to start winning bigger than he has after 4 years.
Yeah, that's why every once in a while I've run into Dennis. He always makes me laugh. He'll throw out a one-liner I love. That's the Kingsbury thing was great. I want to ask you about Penn State and the way they've been able to come back through all of this. What, along the line, what are a couple of things that you've seen here at Penn State that has allowed them to come out of this and be in the spot they're in now?
I'm in the process of answering that question because it occurred to me just recently that we're 18 days away from the fifth anniversary of the sanctions that were supposed to burn the program to the ground.
Right.
In that time, in less than that time, in 4.5 years, Penn State changed coaches twice and won the Big Ten. It says a lot about Penn State. It says a lot about the NCAA. And obviously they rescinded some of the penalties. We know that. But I don't think they'll come anywhere close to doing this to anybody ever again, much like the death penalty with SMU. And it speaks to the point that I think about five programs in the country that could survive something like this, and Penn State is one of them.
What are your thoughts on what James Franklin has done to help make that happen in his phase of this operation?
I think he's been great. Obviously, he's recruited. They have one of the best offenses in the country. To get to the Rose Bowl and play that kind of game shows that Penn State is back. Look, I think it speaks volumes about his career. Now he's done it at Vanderbilt. And we all know the constraints there, won 9 games twice. He's taken over a wounded program is the best way to put it. And look, we should preface everything we say about sympathy for the victims because that's the story here, not football.
Oh, always.
But he took over a program that was wounded and made it into a champion. And I think that, look, if he left today, he might be able to write his own ticket. You know, he was kind of known as that. Well, who is this guy? He's got a great personality. He did it at Vanderbilt. But what is he really? I think he's showing the world who he is now, a really good coach.
Dennis, you made a great point about 62 or 63 coaches that are entering their third year or less in college football. What does that tell us right now about the state of this? And also, what is it telling us about how much time a coach has to make something happen?
Well, overall, a lack of patience from ADs for their guys. It also suggests this is one of the coldest hot seats in years. Because of that, almost half of FBS coaches are going into their third year or less. And you would think, I call it the year of the honeymoon, you would think that they're going to be given some time to prove themselves. There are about four or five in Florida alone that are on that list. Mark Richt, Charlie Strong, Lane Kiffin, Butch Davis, who are among those guys. So they're not. You wouldn't think those aren't going to change anytime soon. So it's a combination of that impatience and I think some staying power now. Some of these coaches, we're not going to see wholesale changes for a while.
What do you think, one of those will be, I'll make this the last question because I know you have to get going, about Tom Herman with Texas. What is the state, in your opinion, of Texas football, and why have they stalled?
I didn't get the first part of the question.
Okay, Tom Herman takes over Texas, so he's one of those first-year coaches. So what is your opinion of Texas football, and why do you think that something like that, that shouldn't stall, has?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, Charlie Strong, for whatever reason, and there are a lot of them you could posit out there, didn't get it done at Texas. But 16-21 after 3 years at Texas and losing to Kansas isn't going to get it done. I think it's, at least under him, it was lack of attention to detail. They really had some holes on their special teams, had a lot of missed extra points, which in the moment doesn't sound like much, but in the big picture does. Great recruiter. He had 2 consecutive top 10 recruiting classes to the point that he told Tom Herman, through me, the cake is baked, all it needs is some icing, referring to the team he took over.
Right.
In terms of Tom Herman, I think he's this is hard to say, but a proven commodity. He's got a championship ring from Ohio State.
Yep.
He's one of those quarterback whisperers. You know, we know what he did that year in 14 at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
2 big seasons, including a New Year's 6 win in 15 at Houston. And there are no excuses for Tom Herman now, if there ever was any. He's got all the resources he wants. And I do really believe that he's going to lead Texas back to the top in championships. This starts another discussion, but there's probably no other place in the country better suited for Texas to win championships than the Big 12. So I don't think you'll see them moving anytime soon.
Dennis, I know you have to get to something else. I appreciate the time very much. Always enjoy the conversation.
All right, thanks, guys.
Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports. It's always great to talk with him. They've done CBS Sports, to their credit, we're able to get a hold of 20% of the 130 FBS head coaches and do a series of anonymous polls. And part of the anonymous polling is dealt with recruiting. It is dealt with cheating. It is dealt with officiating. The overrated, underrated coaching thing, which, you know, part of that is perception, and part of that is also maybe a little professional jealousy for some. You know, it's interesting what they've done. So they've done that, and I found the polls to be really interesting, the ones that they've done, really interesting. And we've talked about them on the show. I mean, so it's worked out for them. They've been able to get a public, you know, we are not the only show talking about this. So they've been able to get some publicity out of that. Hugh Freeze, obviously out at Ole Miss, and the phone is going to be his big problem when it comes to what he's done. But there's also other troubling patterns that they've found in the phone records of Hugh Freeze. According to a report from USA Today, there are records of over 200 phone calls between Freeze and Lee Harris, a disassociated booster who allegedly gave a recruit cash and free food at his restaurant. The calls between Freeze and Harris took place between January 2015 and the end of Freeze's time at Ole Miss last month. From the USA Today report, the phone calls included the period in which Harris became a part of the NCAA's investigation into Ole Miss and continued before and after his interview with the NCAA on November 16, 2016, in which he provided information that was determined to be false. Freeze was not named or deemed culpable in the specific NCAA allegation related to Harris, and it's not known publicly what the two men discussed in the calls. According to Freeze's attorney, H.G. Watkins, Freeze and Harris met by happenstance, sitting next to each other at a church at some point after Harris's alleged violations occurred, formed a friendship, and played golf together. Watkins and Freeze never discussed the NCAA case, and which would potentially be a violation of Rule 10.10 or 10.1, which is unethical conduct. Freeze's attorney also told USA Today that the conversations between Freeze and Harris were not about that investigation. He said, "I believe that unequivocally. One thing Hugh Freeze has done throughout this is not to discuss the case with anyone," Watkins said. "Part of the problem with the NCAA rules is the school can't talk about the case with Hugh Freeze, and he can't talk about the case with his coaches or players. He's isolated in all of this. That's why I can say categorically he did not talk about the case." According to the NCAA and its notice of allegations against Ole Miss, Lee Harris allegedly provided Leo Lewis, a linebacking recruit, who would wind up actually at Mississippi State, with improper benefits. Lewis claimed in interviews with the NCAA that Harris gave him two or three cash payments between $100 and $200 during visits to Funky's Pizza, a restaurant that Harris owns. Harris also provided free food and drinks for Lewis and his family. So that's what they're looking into. All right, coming up, the Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney in the next half hour. Spider Caldwell, final half hour. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. News at the bottom of the hour coming up next on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Jim Delaney in a few moments. This day in sports history, first car race to be run on brick occurred at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this date in 1909. It's also in 1909 and this date the Phillies were rained out a major league record 10th consecutive day. 1917, team managers John McGraw and Christy Mathewson were arrested for breaking the New York City Blue Laws. What was their crime? They played baseball on Sunday. Ty Cobb, 3,000th career hit on this date, 1921. Eddie Gaedel came to the plate in 1951 for the St. Louis Browns. 3 feet 7 inches tall, wearing the number 1/8. Walked on 4 pitches, then replaced by a pinch runner. It's the only time he ever appeared in a game. The Giants, board of directors, New York Baseball Giants, 1957, voted to move the team to San Francisco in 1958. 1962, Homero Blanca shot a 55 at the Premier Invitational Golf Tournament in Longview, Texas, lowest score in U.S. competitive golf history. Mike Tyson, 1995, knocked out Peter McNeely in 89 seconds. Paul Molitor tied Lou Gehrig's record with his 534th career double in 1996. And John Madden debuted on Monday Night Football in 2002. And with that, we bring in Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney. Jim, welcome back. It is great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
All right, let's start with this. And you did address this at Big Ten Media Days, but what has run through your mind over the last 4 years as you've watched Penn State in many areas come back?
Yeah, I mean, I just think they've, you know, done everything that they needed to do to return to a sense of normalcy. Mostly hard work, really. They were presented with competitive challenges, brand challenges. But everybody working together has made, you know, a lot of progress, sort of earned it the old-fashioned way by working through it.
Also working through it, you had to work through it to get to your TV deals, which are going to now be in place, which you talked about. It used to be that in the maybe 10, 11, 12 years ago, you put everything under one umbrella. Logistically, how much more difficult is it to tie down all the ends when there are so many partners now involved?
You know, it's more difficult. You know, if you went back more than 10 years ago, go back 25 years ago, we had 66 home games, and we had 16 games televised, 10 on ABC and 6 on ESPN. ESPN at the time was smaller than the BTN, and I think of the 10 games on ABC, 9 were regional. So there were 50 games that went on telecast. Fast forward to, 1995 to 2005, we started increasing the number of games from 30 to 40 to 50 till when we launched the Big Ten Network in 07, all the games were telecast in one form or another. But just by going from one partner to two and two to three creates more logistical challenges. In basketball, we'll have four, and we'll deal with that. But the good news is you have one, two, three, or four major media companies that are promoting and marketing you, that have a stake in your success. The other side of it is the simplicity goes out the door. These are natural competitors who, you know, are competing against each other, but they all want you to do well because when you do well, they do well. So, you know, there's no doubt about it. It is monumentally different than it was 15 years ago and whatever monumentally 10x. More than it was 25 or 30 years ago.
This will be the 10th anniversary of BTN. When it came to fruition, what did you envision? And now 10 years later, what is the reality?
Well, you know, it was a you know, first of its kind in college sports, but we had seen regional sports networks before. The YES Network, you know, had launched a few years earlier. We saw that difficulties with that launch. When we were trying to launch the NFL, was going through struggles to get distribution. There was a Victory Network in Minnesota that had failed. New England Sports Channel has been around since the 80s, really. And so that was, you know, an example of success. ESPNU hadn't yet been founded. So we were unsure. We thought if somebody could do it, that we could. We knew it would be challenging, and it was. But our hope was that we would provide deeper and broader coverage of Big Ten sports to Big Ten fans throughout the region and throughout the country. It turned out to be the case. You know, we have more subscribers outside of our region than we do inside of our region. Some 60 million homes, really only about 27 million less than ESPN and 25 million less than Fox One. We're available anywhere where high-speed internet exists globally, and we're syndicated in probably 26 or 27 other countries. So I think it's been a boon for fans. I think it's really enhanced the Big Ten brand, and I think it's been fabulous not only for football and basketball, but for all of our sports, because across all platforms, digital and linear, you know, we're putting out as many as 1,500 events, and actually an equal number of men's and women's events across platforms. So I think it's been a recruiting and branding success, an artistic success, and obviously a financial success.
Yeah, no question about all of those points. How close do commissioners in the future also need to look at the Amazons, the Yahoos, and so forth down the road as options?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, we're involved with four major media companies,
right?
BTN, CBS, Fox, and ESPN. And, you know, there's evolution happening right now, whether it's Hulu or whether it's Amazon. We have content. We partner with major companies to get that content out. Sometimes it's through cable. Sometimes it's through over-the-air networks. And sometimes it's through content agreements with a Yahoo or a Facebook or a Hulu. And so that's actually happening now. And so I see it as somewhat evolutionary. I don't think ESPN is going anyplace, nor do I think Fox is going anyplace. They may have smaller platforms. There may be hybrids of one kind or another. But I think, you know, much has been written about it and probably should be written about it. But there, I don't think there's going to be demise of over-the-air networks or cable networks. But I do think there'll be more distribution modes. And hopefully we'll be able to participate in that and keep a lot of this healthy.
Yeah, no, I agree with that across the board, because you're right. They're not going anywhere, but you have to be aware of everything around you.
Yep.
Friday Night Football. I completely understand what you wanted to do with Friday Night Football, because you're trying to get as many brands of conference programs out there on a Friday night that's available. Were you surprised by the pushback?
A little bit. You know, I would have to say, honestly, that was, you know, we had spoken with our universities. We, you know, it wasn't a one-size-fits-all. We knew that some of the larger stadiums would have a very difficult time, and so most of them passed on home game participation, but they were willing to try it once on the road. Some of the more modest-sized stadiums were willing to do it once home and once away, and so we weren't trying to sell anything that we didn't have good communication and approval from our schools. And so it was transparent, and it was I was of the impression that our schools could digest it. And you know, we got pushback. There's no doubt about it. To deny it would be to deny reality. But the other side of it is that we have tried to mitigate it. We have had good communication with the high schools. We will be doing some of it, but it'll be modest. I mean, I expect there'll be a couple games on Labor Day, as we've always had on a Friday, and there may be a couple of other ones. But we're going to work with the high schools and our own schools to try to find the right balance. But it ends up, you know, we're going to do 90 four 95 games this year, and I think we'll have two on non-Labor Day Friday. So you have to kind of see it for what it is. It is a deviation from tradition, but it's not a deep deviation.
Right, and I know idealistically everyone would love to see no FBS and everybody playing FCS schools. You know, or should be playing FCS schools.
Yep.
Idealistically, well, but what does the 9-game conference schedule do to those 3 non-conference games? Where realistically, there has to be some leeway.
Well, you know, we had never played with 9. You know, we had never had a playoff committee, and we had never tried to dictate to our schools what they should be doing. But again, before we went into TV negotiations, before we went into expansion, we talked for a long time with our universities about how many home games should we have. We have more universities. Shouldn't we have more games? We want to play against each other more, not less. Second is, you know, if people's attention span is getting a little bit shorter, how do you make sure that they're interested in the on-the-field games?
Right.
So to that end, okay, let's play schools that have the same number of scholarships that we have. And then with regard to the committee, let's try to impress the committee. They say strength of schedule is going to be important. So we went the route we went. After 3 years, what we realized was that in years where some of our schools had 4 home games, they were having real difficulty getting 3 non-conference FBS games to fill out a 7-game home schedule. And so after some thought and consideration, we provided them flexibility in every other year basis if they needed to get an additional home game to be able to go into the FCS pool. Some people are not going to do it. Some people may do it. I mean, I expect that it would probably be, somewhere around maybe a maximum of 7, but probably more in the 4 or 5 range, if I'm reading right, but time will tell. But it does give us an opportunity for more flexibility. It probably does, make our schedules less rigorous, but I think there's a good reason to put our toe in the water.
You grew up as a Jersey guy. I grew up as a Connecticut guy, so you and I both know deep down what Madison Square Garden means. So just give, just for the uninitiated out there, how important is, every year's particularly important, but how important is this year to bring the Big Ten, the tournament, to the Garden?
I think it's very important. My dad played in the Garden. I played in this Garden, but this is the 4th iteration of Madison Square Garden. My dad played in the 3rd.
Okay.
And I played in the 4th. So I think it's regarded by most basketball people as the Mecca.
Yep.
The fact of it is that we're living in 2 regions now, just not visiting one and living in another. And to do that, we need to go and play games, important games. And the Garden is an important initiative, but standing by itself, it wouldn't be as important as it being part of a number of connections. You know, we played in D.C. Last year. We were playing a game at a Yankee Stadium. We're playing a doubleheader at Madison Square Garden hockey and basketball. I know last year Penn State and Michigan State played at the Palestra, another great historic venue.
Yep.
So I look at it in a comprehensive way. It's not going to be easy. You talk about we have 3 football partners. We have 4 basketball partners. Only the NFL has more partners than we have in basketball. They have 5. We have 4. And so to manage the season with 1 less week and with, this year Northwestern is having to play at Allstate Arena.
Right.
Minnesota is hosting the Super Bowl. And so we're going to be really challenged to get the schedule to look like it has in the past. I'm hopeful next year and the following years we'll be able to really get back to the flow that we're in. But the coaches understood what we're doing. They knew it was going to be disruptive. It has been disruptive. In a couple of weeks, we'll know sort of what those schedules are. But it's a high priority for our coaches, for our schools. And I very much appreciate the flexibility that people have shown for us to get this accomplished.
And part of that flexibility is playing a couple of games in early December that are in the conference. How closely are you going to look at that weekend with the idea, you know, because you and I both know that a lot of people pay attention to college basketball after New Year's Day is over with. But if there's something in December that can whet the appetite, will you look at that weekend this year closely to wonder if there should be some permanence to it?
You know, I will. Actually, I'm going to make some calls to our coaches over the next couple of weeks, because Matt Painter and along with some of the other coaches have talked about a 20-game schedule. They want to play each other more, one.
Yep.
I think the ACC is going to 20 games.
They are.
I have some concerns about basketball. It is true that basketball, you know, sort of gets legs in January and February. But I don't think that necessarily has to be the case. You know, we play the ACC Challenge, and that's breakthrough programming.
Yep.
And to some extent, you know, I think that the Gabbett games can grow into attractive programming.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yep.
At the same time, we're playing some FCS teams, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
That do not attract in-stadium viewers or at-home viewers. They simply don't. And so if you think about football, it's 12 games, and 9 of them are conference games and 3 of them are not. And football and basketball, you have roughly 30 games in 18 conference, so 12 are not. And too many of those are games that aren't appealing to fans in the stadium and fans at home.
No doubt.
So I've thought about, okay, you know, we know that we have an awful lot of compression in January and February. Wouldn't it be worthwhile thinking about perhaps a game or two less of the non-conference variety, a game or two more of the conference variety, opening the season earlier, and then really using Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday? Don't try to compete with football. You're not going to compete with football.
Right.
But so don't play Friday or Saturday, and maybe you don't play on Monday, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and try to play to attract attention. I think you could. If you put the right games together on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, it's proven to me that you can attract in-stadium as well as television. And I think it's better for the players in terms of compression, perhaps less travel in January and February, and better games in November, December. So I want to talk to our coaches about that, explore it. I think this year will be disruptive because we're trying to do everything, even though we're putting a couple games in December, in one less week. We knew what we were going to get into, but it's going to be disruptive. But going forward, I'd like to find an approach, and maybe it means opening the season a week earlier. Maybe it means a couple more conference games. Maybe it means some scheduling guidelines to improve the quality of the games we're putting out there. But I think that looking at this year and seeing what happens around football championship week with conference games will be, you know, it'd be a good little test.
One final question, and I agree with all of that. That one final question, and it deals with you. You've been on this job now for, what, 28 years, right?
Yeah.
Just through pure experience, where have you grown, you feel, in the job, and where do you approach things a little bit differently because of experience?
That's a good question. I think, you know, we and not when I say we, I mean our presidents, our athletic directors, our coaches, you know, have all experienced a tremendous amount of change in the last quarter century. And undoubtedly will be challenged in similar ways over the next decade. There's no doubt about that. The rate of change, whether it's brought up by technology, litigation, various kinds of external pressures and internal pressures, it's going to require flexibility and thoughtfulness. So where I think I've grown is really the analogy would be I was probably a point guard that liked to score. And now I would see myself as a pass-first point guard.
I like that.
I mean, okay. You know, and so I have to get other people involved. And I think the Big Ten Network was a good example. Everyone had fingerprints on that. You know, I get credit for it, but I didn't do this. This is not a point guard going off for 30 points. This is a project that required, you know, presidents and athletic directors and coaches to see the long-term value of the short-term sacrifice. And so, you know, I don't think looking back is particularly good. I think it's really hard to make progress when you're looking in the rearview mirror. I think you got to stay looking forward.
Yep.
I think you got to learn from the past and be realistic about the future. There'll be challenges, but I think we're fully capable with the resources and history and tradition that we have to really meet any one of them, but only if everybody's engaged and has their eye on the right kinds of objectives, the right kinds of values long term.
Insightful all the way through. Thanks so much for the time you gave us today. I really enjoyed the conversation a lot, Jim, and look forward to seeing you down the road shortly.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, they cover everything. So go to them, and they'll take great care of you. Customer service is number one with them at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.